The next case is 95-1792, State of Ohio, Appeal, Bruce O'Colliver versus the Industrial Commission.
Supposing we find that a coil tractor is not an installation or a construction, do you win?
You win on the first issue.
Okay, because I want to move to the second issue, which is the, to me, the issue is that you needed, whatever it is, 90 feet, I think, to stop this vehicle, this coil tractor, from moving in that direction, and there was only really 18 to 20 feet at the time that he applied the brakes that didn't work.
Your Honor, you're right. There was some evidence in the record from one of the prior operators who said way back when those emergency brakes were in place, he guessed it for approximately 90 feet to stop coil brakes. However, the evidence also shows that Mr. Colliver had been working in a pit containing coils that was about 23 inches deep and about the same wide. When Barbara Falk, the operator, yelled a warning when she screamed that she saw the brakes were failing. There were two men in the pit, one got out completely. Virgo Colliver made it out of the pit and was just caught between the two coils. He was in the process of getting out. Had there been emergency brakes in place that would have done even the slightest bit to slow this machine, he would have been out. Yeah, there's no evidence.
So you're saying the 90 feet versus the 19 to 20 feet, 18 to 19 feet, is not a critical factor.
The thing is, it didn't stop, John. It needed to slow. If all of the emergency brakes were able to do would be to buy him an extra second or two, not even stop the machine. He was in the process of getting out. And that's how the children were after the emergency brakes. He was going to be a stop in the process.
Does that bring in the grandfather clause then? Because do these usually have emergency brakes as well as regular brakes?
These, Your Honor, these L cars, this particular coil carrier, 16 cars in the vehicle, one is with three-stage braking system, the third was with emergency brakes, and that one is equipped on the vehicle. But it is still a vehicle, Your Honor, and when we refer to the grandfather clause, it is specifically applied to installation and construction, so I don't think it does bring that at all. I think we need to look, too, at the statement that the hearing officer made regarding the specific safety requirements, which states that no employee shall be required to operate the coil carrier with inadequate or ill-maintained brakes. When the hearing officer looked at that rule, he stated that the focus of that rule is to protect the operator. He added that language to the rule, and it's clearly not a part of it. In fact, the rule just prior to that, which states that we need parts in terms of having the operator so guarded, that one clearly refers to the protection of the operator. So when you're looking at a mobile vehicle, which weighs 60 tons, and it is used in an area where many of you have your back to the vehicle. A brake failure represents an incredible hazard to everybody in the vicinity.
Thank you. different interpretation. The industrial commission required two interpretations in favor of the employer and against the FSR. Today, instead of rehashing the argument, re-arguing the issue, the real issue is applying the principles of what the industrial commission considers as reasonable and what is the interpretation under the FSR standard, and what the factual conclusions reached by the industrial commission supported by some evidence. We're not here today to re-argue.
What some evidence is there that had these brakes been in perfect working order, that the machine still would not have been able to be slowed enough to give the decedent a time to get out of the pit the way the other man did?
The evidence was, Your Honor, that when he engaged in flooding mechanism, had the emergency brakes been there, it would have destroyed the machine. And it would have continued to skid. Flooding mechanism actually burst the wheel.
You mean at this in this plant, at this point, under these circumstances, it is inevitable somebody was going to get killed? I mean, that's what we got to say if we have to say that there's evidence that there was no way to stop this vehicle, then under these circumstances, somebody was going to get hurt.
Your Honor, the dynamic brake when it failed would normally stop it in 9 feet. I mean, that was the evidence. What happened was, every time there was a problem with the brake, the machine was taken out, it was checked by manual, at one time it was being completely overhauled. The evidence was that what failed here was that an advanced portion of the brake, the first brake, stopped the equipment. And it failed because the relay failed. And the testimony was that this relay is something that you normally check. It's not something you would expect to fail. And one maintenance leader testified that in his 15 years there, he's never seen one fail at any of the full record. So the evidence was not that the arms were not in the support. The evidence wasn't that the arms were new. It was going to happen. The evidence means the reading is interpreted by the industrial commission to the maintenance provider. Back it up, check if the brakes were fine. Went to put it back to the point of the operation. The relay failed. The dynamic brake didn't work. But it did work when he backed it up. So there is substantial evidence that it would not have happened had not fluid accident, had not relay failed, that wouldn't even be part of the machine. So while the accountant spent a lot of time arguing to the state and the kind of support, a maintenance person after maintenance person in the record, and every single time there was a problem with this, they took it out of service, they tested it, they overhauled it, they didn't put it back in the service, the maintenance official was sure that that dynamic brake was working. That would have stopped it in 9 feet. The industrial commission had the benefit of having all the testimony in front of it, specifically indicated that in order to make a credibility determination, and chose to believe
You say that every time it failed, it was taken out and checked, and rechecked, and then put back in service. How many times did it fail?
I don't believe there was an accurate count over the years. There was a validation that it failed, and it failed over the course of a year period, and it was breaking.
Well, at some point, wouldn't it be prudent to replace this vehicle if the brakes kept on failing? Isn't that a failure on part of the employer, that here a piece of equipment kept failing, but then continued to keep that vehicle in operation after it was allegedly fixed? Isn't that a failing on part of the employer that they would knowingly keep a vehicle that failed time after time after time?
In that every time it would have remained in the department, they either fixed it or checked out fine, but there were references in the record and there was a complaint of it. They developed the reason she had trouble with the brakes, that she had incidences and observed going on the same thing that was being announced as a problem. So the employer relied upon very department and be told that, you know, either fix it or there was a problem or a reason why the engineers were driving past it.
Was there ever any recommendation that this vehicle was defective and that they should get a new one?
No, Your Honor, there wasn't, because they had been continually problems in the fix, or there was no problem found in the experience maintenance.
But doesn't it seem to you that if a machine keeps failing and failing and failing, that it is defective? Isn't that just common sense or reasonable thinking? That if something keeps failing, it's defective?
Your Honor, I think that the question was a failing. And if the company and the maintenance department resolved the question that it cannot fail most of the time, and the time that it did fail, we're going to call it fixed.
It sounds from your interpretation that they had a very close relationship with this machine because they saw it so often.
They did. And they saw the person complain about the failing and driving at excessive speed.
Is it an expensive piece of machinery? Very expensive. I see.
So there's no safety requirement that requires the employer to retain quite a piece of machinery. Requirement governing the facility, governing the employer, why is that standard?
Does that mean it's okay to put a 60-ton piece of machinery, mobile piece of machinery, into the plant where workers are, it's done that way?
No, Your Honor, what it means is that there's a specific labor requirement governing the engineering. That would break the employer as their entitled to a penalty. And I think it's important to note that the suggestions are made by those.
So you can have a mobile something move around the plant, 60 ton piece of equipment without breaks at this point in time. And that facility would not be subject to any violations of the specific safety requirements.
VSSR regulations are applied strictly against the plaintiff because it is a penalty in addition to other compensation. So of course it held for a long time that employers have to be on notice that the violations are very specific. And I guess I wonder why, with respect to the grandfather issue, why employers wouldn't be interested in having the word installation and construction applied sort of as common meaning. I mean, unless these words are terms of art, I have a very difficult time understanding how installation and construction applies, how this piece of equipment is an installation or construction. Now, you've argued it in your brief, I know, and we've got two cases that seem to go both ways, but what's your strongest argument on the fact that a coil tractor is an installation or construction?
I think that the investment commission, they wanted to go on to a wide picture, they looked at that picture. The simple fact is, you can't interpret it two ways. You can't interpret the wide picture that you interpret as one mobile equipment. The investment commission would not have put the installation and construction language in front of other public citations that only dealt with mobile equipment. But with that same language in front of the window washing standard, they would have done a single piece of window washing.
We would like to just step to the other side. After I met
place where they can consider safety requirements, and I think that that is the key here. We're not talking about whether tolerate those people in context. So we're looking here today whether this particular employer should be assessed with a penalty for violating the safety requirements. This court most recently, we have Russian, looked at some very
that other operator was also a speeder?
I don't believe that's in the record, sir. And I don't know if that has ever confirmed that anyone was a speeder that was a victim. But we can't lose sight, of the fact that humans are safety requirements. These requirements are here by mandate of the Ohio Constitution to protect the safety of employees. Every single one of these requirements aims to protect the safety of the employees. Yes, employers need to be fully apprised of the requirements incumbent upon them so that they can protect the safety of the employees. employee. A clear reading of both of 4121 will alert anyone that the only limited exemption granted of compliance term rules is granted to previously compliant installations and construction. Under no definition can an industrial process